Hello everyone, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to an episode of Everyday Black History. Happy Monday everybody out there. Hopefully you had a good weekend. This week most people have a short week because of the Thanksgiving holiday, but I know with coronavirus that affected many people's plans of being able to go away and be with your family like you normally would. You know, I mean, we all know that Thanksgiving was a sham, but it's a day that we all get off, and it's a day that, you know, you can usually, you know, get an opportunity to have some time, some family time, you know, hang out with the relatives. So, but unfortunately, because of coronavirus this year, many people aren't having Thanksgiving. So even if you're staying at home, if you're having a small group, hopefully you have a good one, a fun time with those, you know, small group of people, whether it's close family, close friends. Hopefully you have a good time, a safe time, and enjoy some of that, some good food for some good cookers. You know, if you don't have any plans, then just enjoy the long weekend, you know. But as we cruise through the month of November, we're almost done with the month of November. 2020 is almost over. I know many of us want to put 2020 in a rear view. Some people, it's been a good year. For most, it's been a stressful year. But, you know, this has been, a lot of things have happened this year, as we know, just based off the news. And it's been rough for most people. But hopefully for y'all who are having a rough time, keep your head up. And if you had a great year, hopefully the rest of this year will continue to be great. And next year will be even better. So today on Everyday Black History, we're going to be, at least for the next few episodes, we're going to be highlighting African-American newspapers, African-American journalism. You know, since the 1820s, there have been African-American periodicals and newspapers that sprung up, you know, that was geared directly to the African American population. That was both geared toward free blacks during that time. But as far back as the 1820s, in the 1840s, there were always African American periodicals and newspapers that came up. And as black people moved to urban centers and you know, around the country, pretty much every large city with a significant African-American population had newspapers that were directed toward them, you know. And that's important for us to be able to, you know, read newspapers that it has news geared towards us. It's not biased. It's not painted in a way to, you know, make us look bad like many of the, you know, most popular news outlets do. You know, it's periodicals and newspapers that talks about our issues during those times and beyond. And you know, black businesses were able to advertise in these newspapers, so it was a real for us, by us mentality in a situation, you know, where we were able to benefit one another through, you know, in past news in our communities, locally as well as nationwide. Every city, if you lived in Detroit, if you lived anywhere in the South, you know, in Atlanta or Houston or, you know, any of those areas, Pittsburgh, anywhere where there was a African-American population, there was always a newspaper that was geared directly towards it. Unfortunately, especially now in the 21st century, papers, many newspapers, not just, you know, African-American newspapers, but many newspapers have merged or shrunk or shut down because of the internet. Now it's easy to just, you know, go online and find out any information that you need. But we're just going to talk about African-American journalism and African-American newspapers, because as we know, it's important for us to be able to get the news from our own people, and how good it must have felt. Because, you know, there's always been African-American newspapers around in New York, but, you know, they weren't as widely circulated, obviously. So it wasn't a thing that I got to enjoy as much as I would have liked to, reading in African-American newspapers, you know, honestly. But the first African-American periodical that was started was called Freedom's Journal. And it was started in 1827 by two men. And these are the two, these are who we're going to highlight today on Everyday Black History. Two men, Samuel Cornish and John Brown Rustworm. So these are the two men who started, who were one of the found, two of the founders of the Freedom's Journal. And Freedom's Journal was geared toward the free black population in this country. Very small population, but it was geared toward them. Now, Samuel Cornish was born in 1795, and he was a minister, an abolitionist, and a journalist and a publisher. He was a leader in New York City's small free black community, and he organized the first congregation of black Presbyterians, because he was a Presbyterian minister, in New York. In 1827, he became one of two editors of the newly founded Freedmen's Journal. And he also was a founding member of the American Anti-Slavery Society in 1833, which was an interracial society, obviously against slavery. Now, he was born in Delaware, Sussex County, to free parents. His parents were free. And as a young man in 1815, he moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which had a large community of free black people. After that, he moved to New York City in 1821, and it was then when he organized the first congregation of black Presbyterians in the city of New York. Now, when he was ordained in 1822, his parish was officially established as the New Demeter Street Presbyterian Church, making it the first black Presbyterian church in the city. And he ministered in Philadelphia as well as in other churches in New York City as well. He had high-ranking positions in the American Bible Society, the American Missionary Association, which was founded in 1846, and he was one of the four founding black members of the American Missionary Association. As we know, the American Missionary Association helped with starting a lot of the historically black college and universities that are in existence today. He was one of the four. So Samuel Cornish is one of the four founding black members, as there were a total of 12 founders. And the American Missionary Association had both black men and white men as well, as far as their founders and in their, on their boards. As mentioned, he became one of two editors for the Freedom's Journal, and this was the first black newspaper in the U.S. And the Freedom's Journal was intended to serve the 300,000 free black population in the country, especially in New York, as well as to offset the racist commentary of local newspapers in the city, which is why having black-owned newspapers were important, especially during this time, because during this time there was a lot of propaganda about African Americans, that we were lazy, that we were good for nothing, we were this, we were that. So having a black-owned newspaper can help, will help offset that, you know, just having this having the true commentary on who we are as a people, as opposed to the other newspapers that were using propaganda to make the masses think we were a certain way that we weren't. And he left the newspaper after only a few months, but he returned 2 years later. But while he was gone, his partner, the other editor, John Rustworm, was a Pan-Africanist, and he had advocated for colonization in Africa for free American blacks. And unfortunately, when he did that, a lot of readers for the Freedmen's Journal were lost. And this is why Samuel Cornish returned to the paper, because he wanted to try to revive it. And he changed the name from the Freedom's Journal to the Rights of All. But unfortunately, even though they did have a pretty good circulation for its time, the newspaper folded after. Yeah, I keep saying Freedmen's Journal, but it's Freedom's Journal. Sorry about that. But John Rustworm, who we will get into in a little bit, he, as mentioned, was a Pan-Africanist, and he was always talking about going to Liberia. And he actually did go to Liberia in 1829, which we'll get to. But Samuel Cornish wanted to revive the newspaper after John Rustworm left. And unfortunately, ended up folding. But he was also the editor of the Weekly Advocate, which was later renamed the Colored American. And he was the editor for that from 1837 to 1839. And this paper was owned by another black man as well, by the name of Philip Alexander Bell. He, in 1833, as we mentioned, Sam Cornish was one of the members of the American Anti-Slave Society. And he was active in that organization until 1840. And then he left to join the newly formed American and Foreign Anti-Slave Society, largely because of disputes with other members in the abolitionist movement. He used his position as a journalist and editor to inform the public on the issues involving abolitionism. So he was able to spread the word through the newspaper. Unfortunately, Sam Cornish died November 6, 1858 in Brooklyn, New York at the age of 63. But at that time, you know, living to 63, you know, was old. He was old if you made it that far. But he, you know, goes down as one of the first, as one of the founding members of the first African-American newspaper, the Freedom's Journal. So Sam Cornish, we salute you for your contribution to black history. As we talked about, John Rustworm was the other editor of the Freedom's Journal. And he, as well, was an abolitionist and a publisher and a colonizer of Liberia, where he moved from the United States. Now, Liberia was always intended to be where you know, African Americans were supposed to go after the Civil War. Was always, you know, said that we should go back to Africa, go to Liberia, and many Pan-Africanists, you know, held this view. So John Brown Rustworm was one of the first, you know, one of the earliest to talk about going back to Africa and going to Liberia. He was born in Jamaica to an English father and an enslaved mother. And he traveled around with his father, and he received a formal education where he became the first African-American to graduate from Hebron Academy and Bowdoin College. He moved around a lot and due to his education. And he was supportive of many different organizations and societies as well. Now, as mentioned, he was born in Jamaica in 1799, and he was the mixed race son of an English merchant father and a black slave, a mother, unfortunately. You know, that was times. But the family was in Jamaica. They stayed in Jamaica until 1807, and they sent John to Quebec. In 1812, he moved with his father to Portland, Maine, where his father remarried again in 1813. And during this time, his stepmother, now we don't know the relationship between John and his father, but his stepmother apparently insisted that his father acknowledge John Brown, as he was then known, and grant him his surname. So I'm guessing that obviously before this time, he was only known as John Brown. He didn't carry his father's name. That could have been because his dad didn't want him to know, didn't want the world to know that he had a black son. Who knows what the situation was. That's probably what it was, considering the time. But his second wife, and we don't know what happened to John's mother, since she was a slave, I mean, we can only guess. But his second wife insisted that he give him his surname, and then he became known as John Brown Rustworm. You know, he lived with his father and stepmother until his dad died in 1815. He stayed close to his stepmother even after she remarried. as he mentioned, he attended Hebron Academy in Maine, and he focused on his studies to finish his education. And he graduated in his early 20s, and he taught at an African-American school in Boston afterward, after he got his degree. And several years later, he relocated to Maine to live again with his stepmother and her new husband. And they helped him to pay for further education when he enrolled in Bowdoin College in 1824, graduating in 1826. And he became the first African-American to graduate from that college and the third African-American to graduate from an American college. Now, I'm sure at the time when he graduated from this college, he didn't know it because, you know, these first, you know, we find out about these first later on. When he was living it, you know, and when he was doing it, you know, I'm sure he didn't know that he was there. Well, maybe he didn't know, because I'm sure because he was there with all white students. But and we can only imagine how hard it was for him being in that school. As the saying goes, pioneering is difficult, you know, and he was definitely a pioneer in education by being the first to graduate from his college and only the third African-American to receive a college degree. Now, he moved to New York City in 1827, and there is when he helped to start the Freedom's Journal. And New York City boasted the largest population of black folks in any northern city, and it was estimated to be 15,000, which was 10% of the 150,000 free colored people living in the North, as it was said at the time. By the early 1800s, these free black men and women and escaped slaves, they lived segregated, and they developed, we developed our own churches, our own schools and clubs. And even though 90% of black people were still held in bondage, these churches and schools and clubs proved to be more than social outlets, you know. It was a means of survival for our people during this time. And on March 16th of 1827, at the age of 27, he was one of the one of two editors, as Samuel Cornish, who we just talked about, of the Freedom's Journal. And they geared their news toward this population of free blacks. And as we talked about during Samuel Cornish, when we were talking about Samuel Cornish, John Rushworm regularly included material about, you know, going back to Africa. He included things on ancient and modern African history, providing readers on both sides of the Atlantic, whoever, you know, got their hands on Freedom's Journal, were able to learn about ancient and modern African history. And he provided information and a source of information about the continent of Africa to anybody who would read or who could read the Freedom's Journal. And since he had he was highly educated, he was able to include a lot of what he learned into his journalism for the magazine. And he even had a poetry column in the first issue, which was printed, which was named The Prediction of the Origin of Rome. And it was an excerpt from John Ring. And, you know, he was able to include canonical texts of the English literary education. It's like, that's, I'm getting tongue-tied, you know, trying to say that correctly. But, you know, John Russell was very educated, you know, obviously, as we talked about. And he was able to include that in his writing. So it no doubt made for a better read when you were reading the Freedom's Journal. When Cornish resigned from the Freedom's Journal, John Rushworm used his position, you know, for Pan-Africanism. I mean, he really, really, from what is written about that time, he really, really, you know, advocated for voluntary immigration to Liberia. And during this time, these ideas were considered unpopular with many and many of the black readers. And a lot of readers, he kind of lost a lot of readers during that time, unfortunately. And he believed that black people were more likely to prosper in Africa than in the United States, as many Pan-Africanists believe. And he was, you know, a staunch advocate for that. And he used his position to really, really push that platform. He resigned as editor in March of 1829, and he immigrated to Liberia. Now, Sam Cornish rejected immigration. And as we talked about, he started a different newspaper, The Rights of All, when he had, you know, trouble reviving the newspaper under Freedom's Journal. But Freedom's Journal may have only lasted 2 years, but it quickly opened the door for a wave of other black newspapers to come along. And by the time the Civil War started, there were more than 40 black-owned and operated newspapers in the United States. So these guys, you know, kicked the door open, and many more came in. Now, John Russell, when he immigrated to Liberia, he started work as the Colonial Secretary for the American Colonization Society. And he served for 4 years, from 1830 to 1834. He also worked as an editor of the Liberia Herald. He left there in 1835 to protest America's colonization policies. He wanted to exercise power in the political arena and felt that Liberia offered him the opportunity while the U.S. did not. And as we know, many during that time, they actually stripped away many black Americans from being able to gain political power through laws and that were put into place. So he was right with his thinking process of being able to do better over there in Liberia than in the U.S., especially during this time. Now, because the U.S. wasn't the land of his birth, he did not feel any strong allegiance to it. So him going to Africa was easier, I imagine, than it was for Sam Cornish, who was born here. But he served as the superintendent of education in Liberia's capital as well. He became the first black governor of Maryland in Africa in 1836. And Maryland in Africa was a colony that later became part of Liberia in 1857. And he held this post until he died, which was in 1851. And he always continued to encourage immigration of African Americans to the Republic of Maryland. And he supported its development of agriculture and trade. And during his time in Liberia, he learned several of the native languages, and he encouraged trade and diplomatic relations with neighboring countries as well as with European nations during his time. Now, he was married, and he had, you know, several children, a daughter and three sons. And he didn't, it's not like when he went to Liberia, he didn't come back to America. I mean, he would come back to America to visit, you know, through, you know, periodically to see family or whatever. But Liberia became his home, you know, toward the latter part of his life. And so I can't say this with certainty, but it sounds like he was probably one of the first Pan-Africanists. We all know Marcus Garvey and, you know, many of the other Pan-Africanists that came about later on. But considering that he was born in 1799, he was, you know, I can believe one of the first Pan-Africanists to come about and, you know, talk about going back to Africa. And he was actually able to do well by going out there, being an editor of a newspaper, being the governor of a colony. So he was actually able to do well and kind of prove his own point about being able to get into the political arena and flex his muscles. Because had he been in America, there's no way he would have made it to any I don't want to say there's no way, but there's probably is the chances of him getting to the political position that he got to was very small. I don't want to say no way because, you know, as black folks, there's always someone through history who are able to defy odds, even during slave times, even during Jim Crow. There were always black men and women who were able to defy the odds and accomplish things. This is why we, you know, do everyday black history, because these are the people we want to highlight, because history is either forgotten them or purposely don't mention them. So I don't want to say that he wouldn't have been able to accomplish this in America, but the chances of him being able to do it are so much more slimmer. But his contributions to black journalism and Pan-Africanism are definitely noted, and something that should be noted throughout our history, because there's so many other Pan-Africanists that came about in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and he not only talked about going back to Africa, he actually did it. So John Brown Rushworm, we want to thank you for your contribution to black history and black culture, and we salute you. Now, that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. And so, as mentioned, we're going to be talking about a few of the black newspapers that came about, because there were a few of them over the years. So we're going to highlight some of the black newspapers that were created starting in the 1800s and into the 1900s. We're just going to highlight some of those for our next few episodes. So hopefully we'll be coming with another episode probably before the end of the week, you know, at least after the holiday. But hopefully you all enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy, the holiday week or whatever, if you celebrate the holiday, whatever it is. And just stay tuned for the next episode.